What's up, guys? I'm Alex.
And I'm Corey.
And we're challenging you to think about gaming in a different way.
On this show, we'll talk about the games we love and why they're important.
This is Super Thought Bros. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. Today, we are talking about a game that I have brought up in the last two episodes, so I'm so happy that we're finally getting a dedicated episode on it. That game is Celeste. Celeste was a game that came out at the beginning of 2018, and it took the gaming community by surprise and by storm. It was an indie game that came out from a Canadian developer called Matt Makes Games. And Celeste was went on in 2018 to be nominated for a lot of major awards, including at the Game Awards Game of the Year, right alongside the big AAA games like God of War and Red Dead Redemption 2. Like, think about that. This tiny team of maybe, I think it was 8 or 9 people.
Oh my gosh.
Was in a category for best game of the year up against these humongous AAA games with so much money, like Sony backed games. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks to the heart of what this game is. It's a 2D platforming game, which is really tight. It's really approachable because there's only three main actions of jumping, dashing, and climbing. The levels are challenging, but I would say fair. And, you know, the 16 art-bit style was really beautiful. But I think what makes the game so special is what it has to say about the human mind, our relationships with ourselves, and how that ultimately affects the people and the world around us. Corey, what has been your experience with this game?
I mean, I feel like not only is this game super fun as a platformer, which if you enjoy the, you know, classic platformer Mario, Castlevania, anything in that sense, you'll enjoy this game. But what this game does really well, more than any other platformer I've played, is establish mood. I mean, it mm-hmm. is just so... it's so inviting for a game that is like kicks your ass. I mean, it really kicks your ass. But I had a blast playing it. And I know you and I talked a little bit about how it's strangely encouraging. Like, I don't know. It really helps you feel like you can keep going. And I'd like to start by like sharing one of my favorite. So like in between deaths or loading screens, it gives you like these little quotes sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I remember like I kept dying for the first couple of levels. And one of the quotes says, be proud of your death count, Madeline. The more you die, the more you grow. And I thought that was awesome. I love that.
Yeah, I think that ties into the main theme of the game, which I'm going to talk about in detail later. But that theme of feeling like you're up against something, when you look at it, you're like, oh my gosh, how can I do this? This is sure. impossible. But continuing to work at it, even when you feel discouraged not to, I think is a prevailing element of the game, both in the platforming and how it relates to what the game is saying about ourselves in real life.
Totally.
A little background on the plot here. So Celeste follows the travels of a girl named Madeline, who suffers from anxiety and perhaps depression as well. And she has dropped everything in her life to try and reach the peak of the mountain known as Celeste. Why? She doesn't really know. She just feels like it's something she has to do for herself. And early on in her adventure, she comes across a shattered mirror. And from it appears a purple-haired version of herself. This other part of Madeline is the personification of the inner demons that she deals with on a daily basis. And this part of Madeline tells her she can't possibly climb this mountain. She's bound to fail, just as she does in her everyday life. This shadow of Madeline is the main antagonist, if you will, of the game. And much of Madeline's journey is spent either running from or yelling at this part of her in an attempt to have her leave her alone. However, Madeline doesn't really realize at the time that she won't be able to climb the mountain until she's able to quell this part of her mind and work with it to eventually reach her goal. I'm going to start off with the mountain itself. So the mountain of Celeste represents, yes, a physical and mental challenge for the player to overcome, because it's a giant snowy mountain that is treacherous, but it means a lot more than that to me. From the moment that Madeline reaches the mountain, there's an old woman that she refers to as Granny that takes a look at Madeline and kind of says, oh, you're not ready to climb this mountain, because on Celeste Mountain, you see things that you're not ready for. From my vantage point, the mountain is a representation of the struggle to overcome our inner demons that we deal with on a daily basis. For Madeline, her anxiety is a crutch that hinders her self-confidence, her ability to focus, and subsequently her ability to create and maintain relationships. For example, early on in this game, Madeline becomes overwhelmed with the prospect of climbing the mountains. I think this is after two or three chapters.
Yep.
And she calls an unnamed boy and begins panicking and tells him she's really afraid. And the boy does calm her down, and then he gently reminds her that they haven't spoken in months. And Madeline, in her frantic state, has completely forgotten all this. I view this as perhaps a relationship of some sort in Madeline's life, whether it was romantic or not, that fell apart because of Madeline's anxiety. And Madeline realized she couldn't maintain it or another maybe meaningful relationship until she conquered her demons, which is why she came to the mountain in the first place. The mountain can mean, I think, a lot of different things to a lot of different people. For Madeline, it's her anxiety. For others, it's depression, eating disorders, PTSD. And Celeste is that physicalization of our personal battles with these conditions or these self-doubts. And I think that it's very difficult to live our life to the fullest if we're allowing these things to hold us down. For example, if I'm consistently doubting every word that comes out of my mouth, how am I supposed to have a fully present and aware conversation with someone if I'm more focused on what I'm saying than I am what they're saying? And I don't think that we can live our lives to the fullest until we... Winning these battles is not a correct term, because I know that in some of these things that people suffer for, you can't necessarily win because they never go away. But I think a huge step forward is acknowledging that we have some growing to do and actively taking steps to become a better and fuller person. And in this game, that means climbing the mountain of Celeste. Yeah, Corey, you have anything to add on to that?
No, I mean, you've totally summed up what this game means. It's what's really cool about the whole climbing of the mountain and feeling like it's really challenging but still doable is that you really are encouraged to... It's weird. It's not that you look forward to dying in the game. Like, it's not like you're actively trying to, but it definitely relaxes you enough so that you like are willing to try different things.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I read a brief interview that someone did with the sound designer of the game, who did all the music as well, and they said that they wanted to create music that was simultaneously somewhat stress-inducing but simultaneously puts you into a lull of focus and relaxation, which is obviously two polar opposite things, but the game does that in a really interesting and clever way.
Yeah, I mean, the music is really interesting too, because if you notice, so it's a very like piano-driven, sparse type of sound, but the beginning of the level, like the music is really chill and calm, and the closer you get to the end of the level, it speeds up. If you notice, the tempo of the music changes, which I thought was a really interesting...
Yeah, it builds the anticipation.
Like, it's almost like lullaby music. It kind of lulls you into this like sleep while you're playing the game. I don't know. I get into like a really weird zone when I play this game.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
It definitely feels like it encourages you to kind of go to another place. I know that sounds weird, but that's how I felt.
Well, it's encouraging you to go to your own mountain of...
Right, totally.
...of Celeste. Speaking of which, I think something that the game does really well is... I know that sometimes I've dealt with things in my life, and I feel like I must be the only person in the world who's feeling what I'm feeling right now, and I think I'm going crazy from these things that I'm feeling. But the game urges you that this is not true, as the Mountain of Celeste is home to other people as well as Madeline, who are working to overcome their own issues. A beautiful yet very tragic and sad example of this is Mr. Oshiro. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes.
Mr. Oshiro is chapter 3 in the game. He owns a deserted hotel, and as soon as Madeline encounters him, she kind of realizes something is a little off with him, and that we soon find out that Oshiro suffers from some serious self-doubt and perhaps maybe some bipolar disorder. And he offers to house Madeline overnight at this messy cluttered hotel. But Madeline very kindly just says, oh, I'm trying to climb this mountain. I don't really have time to stay. And Oshiro takes this as a personal offense and begins talking to himself, saying things to the degree of, oh, you're a terrible person, Oshiro. Of course she wouldn't want to stay with you, or you'll never be good enough to attract guests. And Theo, who is one of Madeline's traveling companions, immediately just says, oh, he's weird. He's crazy. Leave her alone. He's not your project. But Madeline sees Oshiro as just someone who's going through something and he doesn't know how to deal with it. And I think it's interesting, too, that Madeline can point this out in other people, but not yet herself. She's beating up herself for feeling these things, mm-hmm. but she sees someone else who's suffering from the same things. And she's just
that's like, funny that you saw it that way, because I wasn't sure if he is a part of her.
Oh,
you know, like I haven't completed the game like you have, but I've gotten pretty far. And what I've noticed is that there's a very good possibility that all of these characters are pieces of her.
You think Theo is too?
Theo's the only one that I feel like might not be.
Well, I wasn't planning on talking about this, but Theo, you know, is his, I would say his big vice is that he's a little obsessed with social media.
Yeah.
And maybe that is a part of Madeline that feels those pressures of social media. Yeah. And that's a whole another discussion of like, oh, if I don't post these pictures, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do. And if I don't get these likes, then that only feeds into her depression and anxiety. So that's interesting.
Right. And all the characters seem to be lonely in their own way. Madeline, for obvious reasons, right? She has these demons in her head. Oshiro, because he kind of does it to himself, right? The granny certainly seems that way just because of her location. She seems like she's just like out in the middle of nowhere. Theo, because he's wrapped up in his image on social media. And they seem all kind of like these lonely caricatures.
Yeah, and I think there is a sense of isolation in the game. You're climbing this mountain more or less on your own for a majority of the game. I'll get into that later.
Yeah.
Anyways, back to Oshiro. So Madeline helps him to declutter the hotel for a little bit. And we continue to see Oshiro struggle with himself too. I think what the game tries to show is you look at Oshiro and you're like, oh my gosh, like this guy's fears and these things that he's saying to himself are totally irrational. Like,
right.
why would you think that just because she doesn't want to stay at the hotel has any reflection on you?
Right.
But I think that people sometimes do take those things to heart when someone just says, oh, I'm busy today. I can't. So they must think, oh, I must have said something to piss them off. Or their mind starts going on this train and it builds into some fear and insecurity that they hold with them for a while. And I think that's the case of Oshiro, because, you know, this cycle of Madeline just saying, no, I'm leaving. Eventually, Madeline's shadow, the other part of Madeline, more or less drives Madeline to lash out and yell at Oshiro. And Oshiro turns into this monster and chases Madeline out of the hotel. And I believe that monster is a product of Oshiro letting those things fester for a long time because he was either unwilling or unable to deal with what he's going through.
There's an interesting part of that moment, though, because up until that point, we see this other side of Madeline as a villain. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, she does say things to Oshiro that are bad and less than ideal based on the way Madeline was trying to treat him. But at that moment, that side of Madeline does get her out of the hotel. So she busts through the ceiling and mm-hmm. gives Madeline a way out. So I think there's an interesting question there, which is can the bad parts of our psyche or our soul be good for something still? Is there something to the parts of ourselves we don't like? Is there still value to them?
Oh, don't you worry, Corey. I've got you covered with my next section.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Real quick, just finishing up on Oshiro. So Oshiro has bottled something up for long enough. And I think when we bottle those things up or ignore a problem, it just festers and eventually explodes into something ugly that can hurt other people. Madeline, in that scenario, didn't deal with the other part of herself. It got the better of her and it lashed out at Oshiro. Oshiro took those words to heart and feeded a deep insecurity that he's carried with him for most of his life. and he became a monster and drives her out of the hotel. And it's interesting because as we progress through the hotel, we learn that Oshiro had to close this hotel years ago and has never really been able to let it go. I think he misses the employees, his friends, doing his job. And the final shot of the chapter is him just longingly looking out of the window, wishing for Madeline or anyone to return because he's just lonely.
Yeah. Poor guy.
It's very sad. And you know, these demons that hinder Madeline, Oshiro, all these people on the mountain can drive us to do things that we don't really mean, and we can push them away. I always think that when someone is unkind to you or mean, unless you started it, it's more a reflection on them and what they're going through than it is on you or something that you said. And you have to remember that those people are going through something and you have to respect that. And yeah, it might not come out in the greatest of way, but a lot of the times they're mad at themselves or upset with themselves and they're taking it out on someone else. And that's okay. And that's okay if you've ever, I've certainly experienced that myself. And that's okay if you've done that before.
Yeah.
It's just part of the process. So this leads me into Madeline / Badeline, as the internet sometimes refers to her. So Celeste, as I said earlier, Celeste Mountain is the embodiment of human struggle with their demons. And I think that the game's ultimate lesson is that the hardest but most important battle in a lot of cases is coming to terms with our own demons and finding a way to talk to them and include them in our lives, however initially frightening that it may be. You know those voices in your head that say, you're not good enough. You're never going to get what you want. You're going to die alone. You know, they sound different for different people depending on what your fears are, but they're there to some degree, sometimes hindering your own every move. So these voices are given a physical form in the form of the other part of Madeline, or as psychologist Carl Jung put it, a shadow. Carl Jung had this theory of personas and shadows, where personas are these fronts that we put on in other people. They're not necessarily true representations of ourselves. Maybe you have a social media persona that you put up for other people. And the shadows are the inverse side, which are the parts of you that you choose to ignore, that you don't think other people want to see, or your insecurities. And this is very much Madeline, or the shadow of Madeline.
Absolutely.
The other part of Madeline first appears when Madeline is looking into a mirror, which is a very vulnerable moment for a lot of us, you know, ruminating on physical appearance, measuring your worth based on how skinny or toned you are. So it's very interesting that that would appear in the mirror at that moment is quite fitting, which actually, Corey, feeds into your theory of Theo being a representation of Madeline, because maybe that is... She doesn't post on Instagram because she thinks she doesn't look the way that she wants to. So Madeline pops out of this mirror, and in their first dialogue in the game, she tells Madeline that she is many things, but she is not a mountain climber. And Madeline is committed to the climbing this mountain at this point and responds, "Are you the weak part of me or the lazy part?" And her shadow replies, "I'm the pragmatic part."
Mm-hmm.
Madeline doesn't really process this at the time, and she only hears the message, "You can't do this. I'm going to come." Remember that pragmatic part quote, because that goes back to what you were talking about earlier, Corey, and I have a point that I want to follow up on that later.
Yep.
So the other part of Madeline at this point then proceeds to chase Madeline through the level, killing you whenever you touch the body. I think this is one of the most brilliant moves in the game. As a player, you're running from an enemy, trying to get through the level as quickly as you can, because if you sit still for too long or stop to think about how you're going to make the next jump, you're going to die.
Yep.
And this was the first part of the game that felt like a real spike in difficulty for me. And I began to get frustrated the more times I died. As Corey said, you die a lot in this game.
You sure do.
But once I finally finished the level and breathed a sigh of relief, I thought to myself, oh my gosh, this is just a taste of what Madeline, or someone suffering from anxiety, feels on a daily basis.
Right.
Feeling like they're getting chased by something they can't outrun, feeling like they can't sit still to enjoy their lives, always feeling like the end is coming. And if they don't, and if she tries and stops to figure out what is wrong, that demon's going to destroy her. And this was the first moment that I saw how much care, research, and heart went into this game. I mean, they must have some firsthand experience in I don't know much about the developers or their background or connection with mental illness, but this felt really real. And I haven't felt moved on this specific level by a game in a long time.
Yeah.
My girlfriend, Kaylin, is playing this game right now. And she recently went through that part of the game. And Kaylin has done a lot of self-work and has gone through a lot of these things that Madeline is going through. And she started playing this section and realized what was going on and just started weeping because she remembered how that felt.
Yeah.
How that felt being chased by something that you're too scared to look back at and deal with. Anyways, so Madeline eventually escapes, but Madeline's shadow continues to derail her progress. And Madeline finally then believes that she can rid herself of her shadow by kindly saying, "I don't need you anymore. I'm setting you free." This only upsets Madeline's shadow even more, saying, "You can't get rid of me. I'm a part of you." She then throws Madeline off a peak, and Madeline falls to the depths of the mountain, even lower than where she was when she started her journey. And for me, this is such a heartbreaking and cathartic moment because for me, I know that there's been many times in my life where I'm like, yeah, I got it all figured out. I'm doing lots of acting things. I know who I am, who I want. I got a girlfriend. I'm so happy. And then 2 seconds later, something happens and I realize that what I thought I saw clearly was really only the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
And there's this whole other thing that I have to deal with. And the mountain seems even bigger. And more unclimbable. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so for Madeline, this is the moment, I think, when she finally sees what she has to do to conquer her shadow. She's tried running away. She's tried yelling at it. And she's tried saying it's okay for her to move on. She realizes now that she needs to sit down and become friends with this other part of herself. And I think that seems like the biggest mountain of all for her to climb, hence why she's at the bottom of the physical mountain.
Yep.
So she picks herself back up and starts climbing again. And Madeline soon encounters the other part of herself, and Madeline tells her she wants her shadow's help to climb the mountain. And the shadow shudders at this idea and begins running away from Madeline. Now the tables have turned. You're the one doing the chasing. Madeline has been running from her anxiety all these years, and now she's running straight towards it. And I think this other part of Madeline is running away from Madeline because she's never shown her any sort of affection. She's been yelling at her, telling her to go away for years and years, and she doesn't know how to do with what this like affection that she's getting now.
Right.
And during this chase, as you continue to dash into her, you hear Madeline saying, "I was only trying to help you. You aren't a mountain climber." I'm going to go back to that line about Madeline's shadow saying she was the pragmatic part of her. The other part of Madeline has actually been trying to help her all along, but she doesn't know how to do it. I think she's just as scared as Madeline is, and she doesn't want to die on the mountain. So she tries to get Madeline's attention by hurling insults at her, telling her she's
not good enough, right?
Not good enough and not a mountain climber because Madeline doesn't seem to listen to her otherwise. The only way she can get attention is by being mean. You know, a lot of times in our lives, the voices that we hear whisper mean things in our ears. And I think they're a part of us that have been ignored or pushed aside. And they feel like they've been left out in the rain and are angry and are just as the other part of Madeline is. And they hurl insults at us because they're upset. And I know it really doesn't feel like it in that moment, but they're just doing their best to try and protect us and prevent us from physically failing by convincing us that we can't do something so we never actually try, aka we can't fail if we ever try anything. And I think this can get carried to astronomical proportions, starting out with like, you might not make the basketball team, so why not try it? So why even bother to try out? And eventually ending with, you won't make any friends, so why bother to leave your room?
Right.
So eventually Madeline pins this other part of her down, and they finally reconcile, and Madeline gives her a big hug and says, it's okay to be scared. And I think in one of the most brilliant moves in the game, there's this quick sequence when they kind of come together and Madeline's hair changes to this purple hair, and it gives her an additional dash before hitting the ground. You've gotten one dash for the whole game, and now you have two. And this is a beautiful gameplay mechanic that allows you, you know, to traverse twice as much ground. And Madeline says, she can't climb the mountain without her shadow's help, and you immediately feel more powerful because you've gotten help from your other self, and now you can work together in the form of a double dash to finally reach the summit of the mountain. It's a really cool mechanic.
Awesome.
Yeah. I think that it's hard to maybe say that you can never truly conquer your demons, because Madeline's anxiety doesn't disappear after climbing the mountain and befriending her. But that's okay, you know, because she's found new ways to deal with it and live a happier, fuller life. And to me, I think that's worth the journey. As we've said, dying is very common in this game. I died over 800 times on my playthrough, which seems like a lot, but I never was like truly, truly discouraged, because the game encourages you to be comfortable with failure and learn from your mistakes. You know, when you're climbing your own mountains and getting to know your demons, you will fail. Like, you're not going to succeed on your first try, and you may even climb really high, and you may even fall to lower depths than you were before, but I think that's okay. It doesn't mean you should give up. I know climbing mountains is scary. I know that you look up at this mountain, this thing that's been hindering you for your whole life, and you try and tackle it is incredibly intimidating and frightening, and maybe it would just be better if you ignore the problem, trying to push it down and say, I'm fine. And as Madeline finds, you can't climb your own personal mountain until you fully acknowledge, understand, and get to know the part of you that has been hindering you for so long. And once you do that, you can summit your mountain. I think one of the most beautiful parts of this game is that at the very beginning, there's a just slight text that rolls across the screen that says, "You can do this." And those four words motivated me to continue a difficult journey through the game, even though at times I was, you know, cursing and yelling in frustration. But I think that's the beauty of this game. You know it's going to be difficult. You know it's going to be frustrating. But you know you're going to become a stronger person if you're able to push yourself to finish it and maybe learn something about yourself and the people around you along the way. Because we all have our mountains to climb, but we can help each other along the way. And Celeste reminds us that we're not alone in that struggle. And if you set your mind to it, put in the hard time and work, you can climb your mountain. And as the game reminds you from the beginning, you can do this. Corey, anything else to add?
That's it, man. You nailed it.
Thank you. I really enjoyed my time with this game. There is a DLC pack that deals with death and mourning. I'm not going to go into that now. Maybe I'll do a mini episode on that another time. Yeah, this was a really, really fulfilling gaming experience for me. And it's only like 8 hours long, y'all, so get in there. It's on the eShop. It's on every platform now. So, okay. I think that's it, y'all. This has been Alex and Corey. Remember, you can watch us play our games on Twitch at Super Thought Bros Podcast. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter at Thought Bros. And we'll see you next time.
See ya.
Bye.